So I want you to imagine just an intense urge or like a massive wave of anxiety hitting you right at your
Oh,
desk.
yeah, like on a totally random Tuesday afternoon.
Exactly, just out of nowhere. And your heart is suddenly, pounding against your ribs, your skin flushes with heat, your chest gets just incredibly tight, and your mind starts racing.
Right, it's that full physical takeover.
Yeah, and in that specific moment, knowing that you have like a stomach, lungs, and a skeleton, I mean, that doesn't actually help you at all.
No, it really doesn't.
Because our conventional biological map of the body, the one we all learn in grade school science class, it's basically completely useless in an emotional storm.
It really is useless because we're so used to viewing our anatomy as this highly compartmentalized structural machine.
Right, like an anatomy chart.
Exactly. We think, here is my arm, here is my knee, here are my lungs. And that categorization gives us this sort of illusion of control when things are
When
calm.
you're sitting in a classroom, maybe.
Right. But when you are actually caught in the grip of a really powerful physical urge, that conventional view actually works against us.
How so?
Well, it makes the experience feel like incredibly dense, intensely personal, and permanently fixed to who we are.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can totally see that. And, that is exactly what we are dismantling today in this deep dive.
We really are.
Because today we are exploring the RAFT program. Specifically, we're looking at Chapter 13, which is titled Mindfulness of the Body Through the Lens of the Elements.
Such a powerful chapter.
It really is. And the mission for you, the listener today, is to explore this fascinating, almost mind-bending shortcut to grounding yourself when those intense urges arise.
Yeah, it's a complete paradigm shift.
It is. Because instead of looking at the body as, this collection of anatomical parts, we are going to look at it through raw, direct, experiential qualities. Qualities that we actually share with the entire natural world.
Which requires, a really profound shift in perspective. I mean, we are moving completely away from biology here and stepping directly into raw sensation.
But okay, let's unpack this a bit. Because shifting from seeing, my failing body to just seeing raw materials, that sounds incredibly difficult when you're actively sweating out a craving.
Oh, it takes practice.
Right. So how do we actually begin to train our brains to do this? Like, where does this practice even fit into our overall toolkit for managing these storms?
Well, to understand that, we kind of need to look at the broader framework that this chapter belongs to.
Okay.
It's an overarching system called RAFT, and that's an acronym, but it's pronounced simply as the word RAFT.
Got it. Craft.
Yeah. And it stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train.
Recognize, abandon, feel, train.
Right. And, while we aren't going to dive into the mechanics of that entire framework today, it is totally crucial to understand that today's focus sits squarely in the very first phase.
The recognize phase.
Exactly. Specifically, it is about recognizing the fundamental raw materials that our body is actually built from in any given moment.
It makes me think of looking at a house.
Oh, I like that. Go on.
Like, usually when you walk into a building, you're looking at the concepts of the rooms, right? You stress about, oh, the layout of the living room or whether the kitchen feels too crammed.
Right, you're caught up in the story of the house.
Exactly, the story. But this practice is asking you to stop looking at the kitchen and just like walk right up to the wall and feel the rough texture of the bricks or the coldness of the glass in the windows.
Yes.
We're trying to look past the structure, past the story, to the fundamental building blocks.
That is honestly a brilliant way to conceptualize it because when you stop obsessing over the meaning of the living room
Right.
and just feel the physical reality of the brick, something subtle but incredibly powerful happens to your nervous system.
Like a reset.
Basically, yeah. Recognizing these basic elements reduces our possessiveness over the structure itself. It chips away at this intense, suffocating idea of my body and my craving.
Because you aren't identifying with the whole narrative anymore.
Exactly. You're just with the raw materials. And when we loosen that grip on the idea of my body, it actually softens those intense, almost primal drives to protect it, to promote it, and to satisfy its cravings at all costs.
Wow.
Yeah, it reminds us that we are entirely dependent on conditions outside of ourselves just to even exist.
So, if we aren't talking about cells and tissues and organs, what exactly are these building blocks? Like, what are the raw materials we are actually supposed to be recognizing when an intense urge hits?
Well, to answer that, we have to touch on the historical context that's introduced in the RAF program.
Okay, let's hear it.
This specific practice was originally taught by Gautama, the Buddha, in a really foundational teaching known as the Satipanna Sutta.
Right.
And Gautama proposed that the body, in terms of direct experience, is made up of primary elements. The first of these is solidity.
Which is what? The earth element?
Yes, exactly. Represented by the earth element.
So basically anything that feels physically hard or heavy?
Yeah, pretty much. Solidity is anything you feel as firmness, weight, or resistance. So, like, if you are sitting there right now listening to this, it is the pressure of your sit bones against the chair.
Right. I can feel that right now.
Or it's the hardness of your teeth when your jaw is clenched, the density of your bones, or, you know, the heavy tension in a tight muscle. That is all earth.
That makes total sense. I mean, I can feel that immediately just by paying attention to gravity.
Exactly.
So what is the next one?
The second one is fluidity, or the water element.
Okay, water.
And this is felt directly as wetness, cohesion, and flow. So you don't have to visualize your circulatory system or anything abstract like that.
Good, because I was definitely failing biology.
Right. You just feel the literal moisture in your mouth, or the pulse of blood flowing through your veins, or even the dampness of sweat on your skin when you are feeling anxious.
Got it. Mm. So earth is solidity, water is fluidity. That leaves, what, two more of the classic elements?
Yep. The third is temperature, which corresponds to the fire element.
Just heat.
Heat and cold, yeah. It's simply the sensation of temperature. So it's the warmth radiating from your core digestion. Or that sudden flush of heat in your cheeks when you feel, say, embarrassed or triggered. Or the sharp chill of the air conditioning against your forearms.
Okay, and the fourth one must be air, then.
Movement, yes. The air element.
Movement. How does air equal movement?
Well, it's experienced as vibration, pressure, and constant change. I mean, the most obvious, undeniable example is the physical movement of breath entering and leaving your nostrils.
Oh, right. Or expanding your lungs.
Exactly. But it's also the subtle pulsing in your fingertips, the fluttering in your stomach, or even the microscopic shifting of your posture as you just try to sit still.
Okay, I have to pause here and push back on this just a little bit.
Here, go for it.
Because when you list them out like that, earth, water, fire, wind, it sounds, I don't know, very poetic. But isn't thinking of myself as a clump of earth and fire a bit outdated or even unscientific?
I get why you'd say that.
Right. I mean, if we want a practical shortcut to grounding ourselves in reality, shouldn't we be focusing on actual biology? Like, why aren't we recognizing that we are made of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen?
It's a great question. But what's fascinating here is that Gautama wasn't teaching literal atomic chemistry.
He wasn't?
No, he wasn't trying to map the periodic table of reality for a science textbook. This is entirely a working model of direct sensation.
Direct sensation, okay.
Yeah, it's not about abstract scientific knowledge that you have to sit there and think about. It is about what you can directly physically feel right now, from the inside out, without needing a microscope.
Oh, I see. So it's about overriding the thinking mind entirely.
Exactly.
Because, like, knowing I am made of carbon requires me to think about a concept I learned in school.
Mm-hmm.
But feeling the heat in my chest just requires me to pay attention to a raw data stream.
Precisely. And while the terminology of earth, water, fire, and air might sound, you know, ancient or poetic, it actually maps flawlessly onto modern neuroscience.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, what Gautama was describing thousands of years ago are the exact systems we now call proprioception and interoception.
Okay, you're gonna have to break those down for us.
Right, sorry. So proprioception is our nervous system's awareness of our body's physical position and movement in space.
Okay.
And interoception is how we perceive internal states, like noticing your temperature, your heartbeat, or the feeling of hunger.
Gotcha.
And here's the kicker. When you deliberately force your brain to tune into these specific sensory systems, you are engaging neural pathways that actively regulate your emotions.
Because the brain only has so much processing power.
Exactly. You are literally stealing bandwidth away from the amygdala.
The fear and panic center.
Yes, the fear center of the brain.
Yeah.
When you force your brain to intensely process raw sensory data, like the heavy physical weight of your bones against a chair.
The earth element.
Right, the earth element. Your brain cannot simultaneously spin up a catastrophic narrative about the future. It literally can't.
That is wild.
Your brain cannot deeply analyze the physical sensation of gravity and have a panic attack at the exact same time. It redirects the resources away from the panicking conceptual mind and into raw sensory processing.
And that is how the grounding mechanism actually works. That's just fascinating.
Yeah.
We aren't just distracting ourselves. We are manually shifting the brain's processing focus.
Exactly. We are changing the channel.
Okay, so the RAFT program also mentions that there is a fifth element to consider here, right?
Yes, there is a fifth element that is incredibly helpful for this practice, space.
Like physical empty space.
Yes, the spatial element. Think of the openness in your body's cavities.
Okay.
The hollow space inside your mouth, your nostrils, the expansion of your lungs, or even just the sense of distance between your organs.
It's like the breathing room of the body.
And that's a great way to put it, because when an intense craving or an urge hits, the body tends to feel incredibly claustrophobic and dense.
That's
right?
Absolutely, like you're trapped.
Right. So tuning into the element of space creates a sense of openness. It reminds you that the tension isn't a solid block. There is actually room within the physical structure.
That's a relief.
And the text does also mention a sixth element, consciousness, but that moves beyond the physical body. So we set that aside for this specific physical grounding exercise.
Fair enough. Okay, so we have these five physical elements we can tune into: solidity, fluidity, temperature, movement, and space.
Right.
But the RAFT program introduces this massive claim that noticing these elements actually dissolves our rigid sense of self.
It does.
And how does paying attention to the heat in my chest or the weight of my bones dismantle the idea of who I am?
Well, it happens through deconstruction. Gautama used a very vivid, somewhat visceral analogy of a butcher to explain this psychological shift.
A butcher. Okay, color me intrigued.
Yeah, so imagine a butcher who slaughters a cow and brings the carcass to the market. While the animal is whole, the butcher looks at it and sees the overarching concept, a cow.
Right, the identity of the animal.
Exactly, but once that butcher takes a knife and divides the cow into its various parts, laying out a flank here, a shoulder there, some ribs over there, the overarching concept of the cow quietly vanishes from the mind.
Oh, well.
You are no longer looking at an animal with an identity. You are simply looking at raw meat. The concept has been deconstructed into its fundamental materials.
That is a pretty stark image, I have to say, but I see exactly where this is going.
Right. Similarly, when we are untrained, we look at our physical form and see a single, solid, permanent entity called me.
Yeah, obviously.
But when we sit down and intentionally observe the body purely as shifting elements, like here is a localized collection of heavy earth, here is flowing water, here is radiating fire, here is moving air.
The concept starts to break down.
Exactly. The illusion of a fixed, separate, permanent self starts to dissolve. You realize that what you call me is just a temporary arrangement of these universal materials.
See, here's where it gets really interesting to me, because once you deconstruct the body into those elements, the boundary between what is inside you and what is outside you completely blurs.
Totally blurs.
And this was a huge aha moment for me when going through the text. The air that you are breathing right now, you know, the wind element, it isn't your air.
Right.
It doesn't belong to you. It's just borrowed world air circulating through your lungs for a few seconds before returning to the room.
It is a constant, seamless exchange. There is no hard border at all.
And it applies to everything. Like the heat your body is generating, the fire element, is just borrowed world fire.
Yep.
The water you drank this morning is turning into the fluidity element inside you. And eventually, I mean, you'll sweat or breathe it back out into the environment.
That's the reality of it.
I sat with this idea of borrowed fire for a long time, and it is incredibly liberating. You literally do not own the heat in your chest.
The text actually invites us to look at each of these elements as they arise and realize deeply, this is not mine, this is not I, this is not myself.
Wow. I don't own this solidity. I'm just borrowing it.
And realizing that is like the ultimate pressure release valve. Because so much of our psychological suffering, especially during a severe emotional storm, comes from this desperate, exhausting need to defend, protect, or gratify this fixed idea of me.
Spot on.
We think, you know, I am hurting. I need to fix this craving immediately. But if the body is just a temporary borrowed arrangement of ordinary qualities passing through, what exactly is there to defend?
Absolutely nothing. The urgency collapses.
Yeah.
When you realize the heat of a craving is just borrowed fire, it literally stops being a personal emergency.
Okay. But I want to really challenge the application of this, though.
Bring it on.
Let's ground this profound philosophy in a gritty, practical scenario for you, the listener. It's Tuesday afternoon. You're sitting at your desk and an intense urge hits you out of nowhere.
Right.
It feels like a physical assault. Your heart is racing, your palms are sweating, your mind is screaming at you to act on the craving.
A total storm. Right. So how do I look at my racing heart and just pretend some neutral, borrowed element?
Mm-hmm.
Because in that moment, I'm telling you, it doesn't feel neutral. It feels like a demon.
That is the exact moment you have to deploy the elements as a tactical response. And it's amazing how this 2,500-year-old teaching perfectly mirrors modern psychology.
Like what?
Like acceptance and commitment therapy, or even ancient stoicism. Because in all these systems, the goal isn't to fight the craving, it's to change your relationship to the physical sensation of it.
Okay, so walk me through how we do that with the elements, step by step.
First, we use the earth element for grounding.
Okay.
When that craving hits, it feels like a tornado. It wants to sweep your mind away into a catastrophic narrative of, you know, I'm going to give in, I'm failing, I can't handle this.
The spiral.
So by deliberately forcing your attention down into the solidity element, the heavy weight of your bones in the chair, the firm pressure of your feet against the floor, you are providing your nervous system with a physical anchor. You are basically telling your brain, the mind is spinning a terrifying story, but the actual physical body right now is just solid and heavy.
So you counter the frantic movement of the panicked mind with the sheer gravitational weight of the body.
Exactly.
You force the processing power back to the earth element.
Exactly. Then, once you are anchored, you can begin cultivating equanimity using the earth and water elements.
Equanimity? How so?
Well, think about the fundamental nature of the actual earth beneath our feet. It does not judge what it holds.
Right.
The earth will support a beautiful, blooming garden, and it will support a toxic landfill with the exact same unconditional solidity. It doesn't recoil from the garbage.
It just holds it.
Yeah. And the same is true for water. Water will wash away the clean and the unclean alike.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It doesn't become horrified, disgusted, or repelled by what it touches. It is completely, fundamentally neutral.
I hear that. But again, an intense urge feels horrifying. How do I map the neutrality of water onto a craving that feels like it is destroying me from the inside out?
Because the horror you feel isn't the physical sensation itself.
It's not.
No, the horror is the story your mind is telling you about the sensation.
Oh.
The physical sensation is just heat or a racing pulse. It's the narrative layer that adds the judgment. This is bad. I am weak. This shouldn't be happening.
The story we attach to it.
Yes. When you reflect on the neutrality of earth and water, you can actually learn to meet your own raw physical urges with that same neutral balance. An urge is just a sensation.
Right.
You don't have to grasp at the pleasant sensations, and you don't have to push away the unpleasant ones in terror. You can just let them exist in the body with the neutrality of water holding dirt.
So what does this all mean? That is just a massive reframe.
Yeah.
We're managing transient physical states, not permanent personal flaws.
Exactly.
When that craving hits on a Tuesday afternoon, you are not a broken person failing to fight off a demon. You are just experiencing a temporary spike in the fire and movement element.
You're just observing the weather.
Right. Your heart is racing. That is just the movement element. Your skin is flushed. That is just the fire element.
Yes. And recognizing that strips away the false intensity. A strong, overwhelming urge is suddenly just the fire element. It is heat. And heat is inherently temporary.
And impersonal.
Totally impersonal. Think about it. When you accidentally touch a hot stove, you don't think, this heat is a reflection of my moral failure as a human being.
Yeah, of course not.
You just think, wow, that is extremely hot, and you pull your hand away.
Right. You don't write a whole tragic narrative about how you are always getting burned and you will never be safe from stoves. You just experience the physical reality of the heat and you manage it.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this brings us to the movement element. The air, the vibration, the constant subtle shifting of the body.
How does movement help?
Tuning into movement constantly reminds the nervous system of impermanence. Thoughts, cravings, urges, emotional storms, they're just passing weather patterns.
Right.
They arise, they reach a peak intensity, and they pass, exactly like a breath.
Because, I mean, you can't hold your breath forever.
You can't. And an urge cannot hold on to your nervous system forever either. It physically has to pass because its fundamental nature is movement and change.
This entire perspective is so incredibly empowering, honestly, because it completely removes the shame that usually accompanies these emotional storms.
The shame is huge.
When we are caught in an urge, the shame is often worse than the physical sensation itself.
But shame requires a rigid sense of self. It requires a me that is bad or broken or failing.
Right.
When you use the butcher analogy to dissolve that concept of me down into temporary earth, water, fire, wind, and space, you dissolve the very platform that shame stands on. Shame cannot attach itself to borrowed world fire.
That is just mind-blowing. And, you know, this deep dive really only scratches the surface of what is available in this material.
Oh, absolutely.
The practice of deconstructing the physical experience is just one tool in a much larger toolkit. If you want to explore this further and really integrate the entire interment, recognize abandoned feel train framework into your daily life. The material we've been unpacking today is from the RAFT to Freedom Workbook.
It's fantastic material.
It really is. It is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. And what is truly remarkable is that they are making the entire 66-chapter program freely available online for anyone who needs it.
Which is just an incredible resource.
Totally. You can find all of it, including the detailed frameworks and exercises, at rafter2freedom.org.
It is an incredible resource for navigating the hardest moments of our lives.
Yeah.
And as you step away from this and go about your day, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
The next time you feel an uncomfortable physical sensation or a sudden demanding craving arises in your chest, what shifts in your mind if you treat it not as a personal emergency and not as a moral crisis, but simply as a temporary weather pattern made of borrowed elements returning to nature?
To bring this all together, I want to invite you into a moment of self-reflection taken directly from the RAFT program. As you are sitting there or walking or wherever you are right now, turning into your body, how does seeing your body as a shifting, borrowed arrangement of shared qualities rather than a fixed and separate me change how you hold it?
Earth in my bones, water in my blood, fire in my belly, air in every breath.